This is the fourth in a series of four podcasts talking about the IDEO design methods. And this one is about the TRY set of methods. When I think about these design methods as a group, and particularly these ones, so I really like these ones because I think they're the most fun and interesting. What it comes down to with respect to these TRY methods is that they're trying to... You use these techniques, essentially, to try to put yourself in the shoes of the people that are going to use the tool that you are going to build. And so this means not only physically trying to put yourself in those contexts, but also cognitively trying to set yourself so that you have the right mindset, the right frame of mind, so that you're asking the same questions that they would be asking as they're making use of the tools or interfaces that we build. As a group, I think of them as the ones that help to sensitize us most to our participants' needs, to our users' needs. So for example, just really quickly, you could imagine that if you were trying to build a good point-of-sale system, that maybe you should actually work as somebody that's in the service industry for a little while. So in particular, let's say you were building a point-of-sale system for a store, right? So a store like Eaton's or Walmart or something like that, if you were trying to build this in such a way that it made sense and it was easy for those people to use, you would work as somebody that's at checkout, basically, for a while to understand what kinds of problems, issues they encounter. Some simple things that you would see is that, you know, they get very tight around the feet. Bagging stuff is actually much more difficult than it seems. You know, all these kinds of things. Another great example that is related to this is that the folks that work at Access Calgary, which is the Calgary Transit division that focuses on providing services for the handicap folks, is that they actually give their employees a wheelchair, sort of one day a year, each of them. And their job is basically to get to work and to get home from work in that wheelchair. And what that means is they would try to use the system. They would try to board a bus. They would try to see what it would be like to sort of move from their home to the bus stop. You know, all of these things so that they experience it. And part of it is not just so that you feel the other people's pain, but that while you're in the moment, you may come up with design ideas that you wouldn't have otherwise had kind of sitting in your office, right? It's about being one of the people that use your system. Okay, so next slide. So in relation to the user-centered design process, the way I think about it is that these look and ask methods kind of fall mostly in the investigate phase. Learn sort of falls maybe in between investigate and kind of into the ideate phase. Try certainly fits both within the investigate, ideate, or in all three of investigate, ideate, and prototype phases. It just kind of depends on which one of these techniques we're thinking about. So that's how TRY sort of fits in. And maybe it's for this reason I think it's kind of the most interesting set. So next slide. So I've already talked kind of briefly about techniques that help you build empathy for your users or the people that you're trying to design for. And so here we're thinking about empathy tools. So in this particular example that you have here, the idea is that you're going to use clouded glasses or weighted gloves or just gloves at all to experience processes as though you have abilities of different kinds of users. And what I think is interesting about this image that you see here, where somebody is actually trying to punch some characters into the phone, is that the original purpose of this was to say, okay, imagine that you were somebody who had lost sensation in your hands and you were kind of old, basically, and see what this actually feels like, to see whether you can actually dial a number. And in this case, it looks like enter a PIN code, so it seems like, can you even get into your phone? And I think what's really funny about this is that actually we experience this kind of scenario all the time, right? You're coming to school and you're trying to use your phone. You've got your gloves on. And so it's, you know, these empathy tools can be used in a bunch of different ways to kind of explore what it would be like to have different perceptual skills, different motor skills, different cognitive skills, all these different things. And I think they're really, really interesting. So just some quick examples, just a quick example. Actually, this is not going to be quick. It's going to be a little bit. I have a designer friend that works in Vancouver, and their idea was to, and most of these are sort of young people, sort of, 19 to 23 or so, single, living at home, or, maybe first time living on their own. And what they were trying to do was think about, how the city was designed and whether that city was designed for inhabitants of that city. And so my designer friend essentially tasked different teams with experiencing what life would be like if you had a different sort of lot in life, right? So there was a wheelchair team, a double stroller team, and in that you were supposed to imagine that you had twins or babies. And somebody had to wear blurred glasses, and they would put tape on their finger joints so they'd have sort of wonky glasses. And each is assigned a set of basic tasks. For example, go to the store and buy something that you found in a flyer. Take the SkyTrain station from one stop to another, something like that. And the result was, at the very end, was that Vancouver still kind of stinks for people who are not fully able-bodied. And so I'll just show you a couple of examples of what these teams found. So the teams were supposed to essentially document their experiences with images and videos as they went. Oh, one of the cool things was that the double stroller twins, so not only did they see whether it was possible to complete the tasks, but they would also try to see how long it took to complete these tasks. One of the funny bits was that the double stroller, what it would do was they had kind of, I don't remember what device in each of the stroller beds essentially, but at a predetermined time, like one of the alarms would go off and basically would make a lot of noise, and you had to sort of rock this thing. So maybe it was designed on a phone or something. So you had to rock the phone for about 5 or 10 minutes before it would quiet down. So that was awesome. And this would happen kind of as the teams were out doing this, mimicking, of course, what it would be like to have a kid. And this kind of came up in some funny ways, so that I'll show you. So team wheelchair, they found that, in fact, boarding the SkyTrain was quite challenging. So the SkyTrain is a little bit like the C train, and this is what the entrance looks like. So one great thing, of course, is that actually, in terms of height, the train is actually flush with the platform deck. So that's really good. It ended up being, though, that the gap between the platform and the train was just a little bit too big, and the student basically bailed right out of the wheelchair, and that caused quite a scene. Something else that happened was that the SkyTrain elevator was out of order. And this wasn't planned. This just kind of happened that way. So they got to a station where they were, sort of a couple floors up. And so, of course, since they're in the wheelchair, they have to take an elevator down because it's just a stairwell or an escalator. And when they got to the elevator was out of order. And so what this team ended up having to do was to get back on the SkyTrain, because they were pretending that they were somebody in a wheelchair. So how would you problem solve here, right? So they got back on the train, went one stop, got off on the next stop, and then had to board a bus to kind of take one SkyTrain station back. I think they either boarded a bus or they kind of like wheelchaired their way back. But either way, obviously this caused a significant amount of time. It was obviously a significant amount of time to get back. And then there was this funny bathroom fail that happened. So this is not actually, they had a bunch of these, which was kind of interesting. But it turns out that in this case, it's actually, you can see that it's quite difficult to kind of push a door open if you're sitting in a wheelchair. And imagine if you suddenly had to go, basically. And in fact, I think what she did was, for the bathroom task, is that my designer friend would call these teams kind of just somewhere in the middle while they were out and say, okay, now you have to go to the bathroom. How are you going to get to the, like, what are you going to do? And so in this case, this team is, I can't tell where they are in this picture, but they might have been in a mall or something like this. And they had to go to the bathroom, and they had to do it quick, otherwise they'd soil themselves. And here, it actually turns out to be quite difficult to push a door open while you're sitting in a wheelchair. And what's interesting about this is that you rarely think about this as somebody who is completely able-bodied, but you become very sensitive to these issues when you're sitting in this wheelchair. Team Elderly, as I suggested, they had to do these things where they would tape up their joints, and it actually makes it very difficult to lift things and to carry things. And just to show, they also wore glasses that you can't see, but it was pretty interesting, because it turns out that if you have a hard time seeing things, then you're going to have a hard time finding things. So in particular, if you are going to, and in this case, I think they were tasked with finding this laundry detergent. Oh, sorry. I'm totally skipping slides and I forgot to say next slide. Okay, so we're next slided a few times now. So hopefully the images kind of made some sense as I was describing them. So now we're on Team Elderly Shopping Fail. So the task was essentially pick up this laundry fabric detergent, laundry detergent. Our fabric softener. And when they got there, not only was the labeling not the same as labeling on the store store shelf, not the same as the flyer, but that the price wasn't adjusted based on the flyer. Same kind of thing with the next slide. So here they're trying to pick up some cat chow for, not chow, this is litter. So some cat litter for their cat, which makes sense if you're an elderly person. And again, this poor labeling, poor signage, where the color of the packaging doesn't match up with the thing on the flyer. So I thought I had one more image in here, but I don't. It was essentially about the double stroller. And what was really fun about that one, and if you've had kids, you've experienced this, is that your kid crying rarely matches up. Your baby crying rarely matches up with a convenient time in your life, right? So what would be the most convenient time in your life for your baby to start crying? Perhaps when you're sitting down, having a coffee and resting, right? And in fact, the baby would cry, and this is not deliberate, this is just kind of how it works out. The baby would cry when, the student was kind of in line to check out. And then she would have to leave the checkout line to deal with the crying baby. Or I think one time the baby started crying while the parent was trying to maneuver the double stroller into the bathroom. And in fact, the double stroller, I think, either didn't fit or something needed to happen to make it all work. Like, they needed to squish in half the stroller, take out one of the babies so that she could enter the stall, basically, to go to the bathroom. So, obviously these empathy tools, I'm giving you the story where the empathy tools are used for this extreme case of designing for people with disabilities. And but this is a really important lesson. One of the reasons why we stress designing for these extreme conditions is that oft the designs ultimately can benefit everyone. And everyone is actually disabled at different points in their life because they're doing something. So I think that the instance of not having one hand to complete certain tasks. Most people think, oh, I'm going to be two-handed for the rest of my life. I'm never going to use a chainsaw. I'll be totally fine. But, if you're carrying a baby, suddenly, well, no, now you are one-handed. And how are you going to manage, right? I'm reminded now that with the double stroller condition, she, in fact, had a hard time managing the double stroller along with the shopping cart that she was trying to manage, which makes perfect sense. So here again, you have fewer tools at your disposal in terms of the hands. You only have one, or you only have a set of two, right? Now maybe you only have one. Another example of this is, when do you lose some motor control? If you're on a bus, you're standing on a bus and the bus is jostling, you have less motor control over what's going on. When do you have fewer cognitive abilities or attentional problems? Well, maybe you're walking while you're working with walking while you're using your cell phone or something like this, right? So ultimately, if we design good interfaces for extreme conditions and sort of extreme users, whatever those might be, these designs can ultimately benefit everyone. So the next couple slides, I'm just going to just touch on just to give you the idea. So the next slide is role-playing. Here, identify the stakeholders involved in the design problem and assign those roles to members of the team. And then actually engage in some of these steps or engage in some of these activities. So that first idea I gave you of essentially kind of taking the role of somebody who works at a store and works at the checkout This kind of role-playing sensitizes you to the issues, not only in a long-term sort of way, but in terms of the cognitive resources, the things that you're facing, all of these things. I think at IDEO, I'm just reading this, they did as they were designing a medical device, an IDEO team role-played a situation involving a doctor, nurse, and a patient, and an anesthesiologist to simulate the interdependent tasks demanded of the operating room staff. So, you know, given all of these tasks, are they able to actually figure out how to use this device? Is the device kind of sufficiently labeled or whatever to indicate the state to everyone? You know, all of these things. So role-playing, again, becomes a very powerful device, not only to sensitize you to the issues that people are facing, but also to potentially what those solutions might be. Be your customer. So next slide, be your customer. I'm just going to read this line. Ask your customer to describe, outline, or enact their typical customer's experience. And what's really fun about this technique is that it turns out that it's rare that clients, you know, clients are the people that you're building the tools for. It's rare that your clients actually have a very good perception, like an accurate perception of what their own customers are going through. But the point is not to show them that they're incorrect. The point is that this is what their client, what your client actually thinks your customer is going through. And this is helpful in providing you and your client potentially with a sense of what your assumptions are in terms of the design. And it provides a useful contrast, right? So it tells you a bit about what they think of what's going on. Next image, next slide. And I've talked about this a little bit. Paper prototyping, essentially rapidly sketch some layouts and some UI designs just to see kind of whether this is going to work. So if you go to the next slide, this is an example of some sketched UI pieces. And I'll show you a couple of examples of this in class. What's really cool about it is that you can mock up these designs really quickly. On the right, these are a set of dialogue boxes and stuff like this. And if you imagine having all of these things in hand, you can actually simulate an entire use of an interface just by kind of flipping between pages, putting these pieces of paper down, and that sort of stuff. And you can actually simulate what the flow of interaction would be like with tool. So that's a really neat technique. Related to this, and next slide, is quick and dirty prototyping. So the basic idea is essentially use whatever materials you have available and quickly assemble possible forms or interactions for evaluation. So this is particularly good and the kind of technique that you would use if you were building physical tools. And by tool, I just mean anything that somebody would use with their hands. So I don't necessarily mean like a hammer, but like a barcode scanner, let's say. And you would just mock this up. And the quick and dirty prototyping is sort of the analog to paper, how paper prototyping would be used for UI design. Here we're actually just trying to mimic physical form. So you can actually, you know, judge weight, you can judge shape and that sort of stuff and see whether it suits the task. Related technique is try it yourself. So we've been talking about this try stuff. And if you just go to the next slide, something that happened in the past. And is a pretty instructive example, I think. Jeff Hawkins was the guy that designed the Palm Pilot, and that's the thing that you see on the right. This is sort of the precursor to all the cell phones that you have, in the sense that what he was trying to do was he was trying to design this PDA, personal digital assistant. So this is one of the first personal information managers. Contains an address book. I can't remember if you could write email with this stuff, but you could write memos to yourself, that sort of stuff, right? Right, calendar. I think you could sync email. You could definitely have contacts on here, that sort of stuff. A task list and that sort of stuff. And to design this, what he actually did was he took a block of wood and he would put it in his pocket. And each time he imagined that he might use this digital device, which he didn't have yet, he would pull out the block of wood and try to and imagine, and he would actually kind of scrawl what he imagined he would need to scrawl on the block of wood. And he tried different shapes of wood, he tried different weights of wood, and he would try different tasks with this thing. And the result, and this is not the piece of wood that he used, obviously, but the result is that he came up with a set of guidelines for how heavy he thought the device needed to be, so it couldn't be actually too light, how big the screen he felt it needed to be. And then he also, you know, based on this technique, came up with certain guidelines for how the text entry needed to be. He realized that actually he expected to be able to see whatever this is, you know, 15 contacts right now. At a time to be able to use this in a meaningful way. And if that was the case, how big would the font need to be? And so therefore, how much room did he have left to do text entry? And so based on this, they actually constructed an entire sort of different text entry system called Graffiti, where you would enter in a character at a time, but in a graffiti form based on some of these early trials. So he was actually experimenting with a block of wood, basically, to come up with design recommendations for a digital device. Kind of a neat little story. In the slide deck, you can actually see a couple of URLs that let you read into this story a little bit more. So pretty cool. So just quickly in summary, the try techniques are about once you start getting ideas, you can test them early on for feasibility. And the point is that you can use this to design more robust prototypes, and not to worry about designing robust prototypes, but just to try the shape, the form factor, whatever it might be. Some of the techniques that I really like here are sort of the empathy tools, the paper prototyping, role-playing, trying it out. Those things I really like. As a summary for all the design methods together, choosing the right techniques can end up being sort of a trial and error technique. Some of them end up being more useful than others. It just depends on the scenario that you're actually exploring. Try to recognize early if you're not learning anything and move on to something else. I think an important thing is, before you kind of necessarily discount a method, is to assume that you are wrong about all of the things that you think is going on, and try to see whether or not you're able to collect evidence that prove that you're actually wrong, right? And remember that above all, you're trying to triangulate on your understanding of the situation. So not only are you doing three methods necessarily, but you're also trying to use complementary methods to gain a broad understanding of what's going on from different perspectives, from different angles. All right, that's it. Thank you.